This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
This is the Bite-Size Business Breakfast Podcast, best bits from Monday, June the 10th. What have we got coming up for you? Some data coming out of the US, the latest jobs data coming out on Friday afternoon. We crunch those numbers with our friends at Emirates NBD. Cold calling, new rules being announced by the UAE government and officials over the course of the weekend. That prompted something of a reaction from a number of our listeners out there. Cold calling is obviously one of those push subjects when it comes to everyone being affected one way or another. No shortage of opinions on that one. Chris Costa is the CEO of Roya. Roya is a new digital bank. It's based in Ajman, but of course we'll have UAE-wide influence. Chris was kind enough to come on into the studio, tell us a little bit more about how they differ from your traditional banking experience. Mohammed Al Marzouki is the head of Hajj Committee for Dubai Airports. He was kind enough to join us on the line a little earlier on in the show as well to talk about the latest initiatives as well that Dubai Airports have put in place to make sure that all those travelling for Hajj 2024 will be well catered for, also proffering some good advice to all those heading to the airport. And Khaled Talouni, the managing partner of Nua Capital, was kind enough to join us in studio as well. Nua Capital planning to invest the remainder of their $100 million fund, totaling around about, just over $40 million across the next 18 months in 10 to 12 companies. We wanted to know where that money was headed. All that and more right here on the Bite Size Business Breakfast Podcast. We've got some more data coming out of the United States over the course of the weekend. In fact, Friday, we had that US jobs report coming through, didn't we, Dini?
We did indeed, and it was absolutely blowout. 272,000 jobs created. Great if you're working in the United States. Not so great if you're living in the UAE and would like interest rates to come down. We have got a Fed meeting this week. The team at Emirates NBD have, of course, been watching this closely. Ed Bell, Senior Director, Market Economics.
The headline number looks pretty strong, that 272,000. But if you look at other labor market data, it gives a bit more of an uncertain picture. The unemployment rate actually rose to 4% thanks to a drop in the household survey of employment, which is a parallel measure of labor market conditions. The participation rate also declined to 62.5% from 62.7%. So fewer people taking part in the labor market. So this mixed outcome on labor, which is simultaneously seeming hot and cold, is going to be a real challenge for the Federal Reserve.
What does it mean then for this meeting that we've got on Wednesday? Fed deciding, looking at the CME FedWatch tool, anyone here in the UAE hoping for an interest rate cut on Wednesday night? I'm afraid you could be waiting a long time. Here's Ed again.
The Fed itself is holding an FOMC meeting this week, where no change in policy is expected. We don't expect to see any change in rates at the June meeting, but instead more focus is going to be on the summary of economic projections. Particularly, it's going to be on the Fed's projection for rates, what they call the dots plots, and whether it's going to be trimmed to two or actually fewer cuts. On the release of the jobs market data, rate expectations from markets have plummeted to less than 1.5 cuts for the rest of 2024, and that's down from close to 2 cuts that had been priced in earlier in the week. We also have inflation data coming out this week for May, which could put further nail in the coffin in terms of a delay in policy stance or policy easing from the Fed.
The one crumb of comfort on rate, if you're borrowing in the UAE or thinking of, is that mortgage rates are already coming down in anticipation of medium-term rate cutting by the Fed. For example, if you were listening about half an hour ago, we spoke to real estate experts in Abu Dhabi. We spoke to Andrew Coville of the brokerage Henry Wiltshire on the back of those new Abu Dhabi stats. But I asked him, okay, what's the mortgage rate at the moment in Abu Dhabi if I want to buy like a two-bed apartment or something? Not a multi-squillion dirham mansion. And he said the rates you can get from banks are about 4% at the moment. Now, that's below the base rate. The base rate, IBOR, is 5.4% at the moment. So the bank's already anticipating those rate cuts and passing them on in advance to consumers for long-term lending products like mortgages. But that's one crumb of comfort. But if you've got a variable floating rate loan, your repayments ain't going to come down on Thursday morning and maybe not at all this summer.
We've also been talking all things cold calls this morning. Why? Because, as you've heard, we've got these new announcements from the UAE authorities announcing what could be up to 150,000 dirham fines for cold callers if you are doing things wrong. We've had a lot of reaction to that. One, loads of people getting involved on the messaging system, but also a lot of people getting involved on your Instagram poll today, Richard.
That's right, yeah, giving you three options on cold callers. What do you think of them? A, I'm a big fan. B, not great, need improving. Or C, I strongly dislike them. Well, I have to say I voted I strongly dislike them, as did most people. 93% of those options took I strongly dislike them. 7% said they're okay, but it does need improving. No one so far has voted for I'm a big fan of cold calling. So many messages and reaction coming in, Tom.
Indeed we have. Yeah, I even put that question to a number of our guests this morning as well. Chris Costa is the CEO of Roya. Roya is a new digital bank based out of Ajman, but with intentions to open branches across the region here. Wanted to know whether we'd be getting a call from Roya Bank anytime soon.
In line with our values of ethical consumerism and proactive transparency and fairness, we are certainly not going to be calling you to push products. The only reason we're going to be calling you is to say thank you, to say, can we help you with something? Or if you have called in or came to us with a problem or a question earlier, then we're going to respond to that. But we're not going to be cold calling customers, pushing unnecessary products and unnecessary borrowing into the market.
Serena and the ARN News Centre team, you guys have been looking at I know you've been looking at the details. So what are the new rules? It's not jail and deportation, sadly for me, but what is...
What do you mean? Sadly,
I am very much in the strongly dislike it camp.
I think that's a bit extreme, don't you?
Well, it is a bit extreme, which is why the government hasn't decided that. But tell us
exactly
what they have decided.
Okay, so some of these new rules and regulations: telemarketing calls will only be allowed between the hours of 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. You will not be able to call people back, as in if the person you're calling rejects the service or product in the first call, i.e. Richard, then they won't be able to ring you back, Richard. But the rules go on to say that they can't call you back on the same day if you've said no or ended the call. So a little bit of confusion there, but generally they're not going to be able to ring you back, I think. Yes, Tom, I feel you're going to ask something.
No, just the initial poll results are coming in. It's like election day, isn't it? I love this. You know, the old exit polls are out. We've got a third of people saying that it needs improving, but the majority of people, two-thirds, 67%, saying they strongly dislike it.
Right. OK. Well, you will be able to file a complaint with the relevant authority if any of the new regulations are violated. Let's say you get a call and it's after six, you'd be able to report that. Also, the marketing calls can only be made from phone numbers registered under the names of the licensed companies and not the individual person. Because you know how with cold calling now, it actually comes up on your phone, the name of the company. It's actually, you can actually visually see that and decide whether you want to answer the call or not. Whereas they've probably been getting around it by having individuals use their numbers to call.
It's interesting you mention that, because just as you mentioned that, Suresh has been in touch with us. He's texted, oh, what's going on? Loads of people getting involved on cold calling this morning. Are they genuine people or are they cold callers just messaging in? We don't know. But Suresh has said, interesting you say that, because people are now calling through their own mobile numbers. Yeah. We're seeing more and more of that.
So come mid-August, that will not be allowed. It will be illegal. So if you did get a call, again, you'd be able to report the company. A marketing company must obtain prior approval from the relevant authority to conduct their business or telemarketing. And now we get to the penalties. So these include warnings, fines up to 150,000 dirhams, partial or total suspension of the activity, your license being cancelled in depending on the situation. There is also a penalty where you could be banned for up to 1 year from operating your telecommunication services. So these have just been listed. They've not specified how these violations, these fines or penalties would be distributed, but they've listed what are the possible outcomes with regards to depending on the violation. But the aim is to protect people from persistent cold calling telemarketers.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's talk banking now, because there is a new kid on the block. The UAE has a new bank. It's a digital-first bank called Ruya. It's based out of Ajman. The CEO is with us in the studio. He is Christopher Costa. Morning, Chris.
Good morning, Richard. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so new bank, Ruya, digital first. And I'm just wondering why you thought the UAE needed a new bank. You worked for Emirates NBD for nearly a decade. You've been in Abu Dhabi for several years. You will be aware that the UAE has lots of banks. So what made you and the founders sit around thinking, you know what, we need another bank?
Yes, we do need another bank. We are a digital-first Islamic community bank, and we were fundamentally born out of the need and the belief that banks should ethically serve their communities, and especially in the UAE. So we've designed products and services around social responsibility, fairness, and transparency, and that's what we're bringing to the market.
So what does that mean in practice? Because if we had the CEO of any bank in here, he or she would probably say the same thing. They're not going to deny that. They're not going to say, no, community is not important. Customer service isn't important. They would all aspire to that. Many of them are Sharia compliant. So where was the gap in the market, the blue sky, if you like?
So the blue sky in the market, there's three fundamental trends and gaps that we're tapping into. It's digital first banking, ethical consumerism, and community banking. So digital first banking means that we're digital first, but not digital only. So as you know, branch banking is seeing a huge transformation, but it's not that branches are dead. So what we've done is we've married high tech with high touch. We've designed a beautiful mobile banking app, and you can open your account and with UAE Pass in under 3 minutes. But at the same time, we have a community center in Ajman, our first one, and we're going to build more around the country, where people still have the ability to come and talk to an actual human being. Because when you look at global consumerism preferences, about 70% of people would say that they prefer digital banking, but the same people asked, would you still like the ability to go to a physical space where you can talk to an actual human being and not an AI bot? And they'll say yes.
So you have that. You've got one branch in Ajman at the moment where you're based. Yeah, I know you've got a back office in Dubai. Will you be getting a branch in, Dubai and Abu Dhabi are the obvious ones?
Yeah, so we've just been in the market for about 2 months now, and our community center in Ajman is open and open to the public and with open doors. And we're looking to build more across other Emirates, across Abu Dhabi and across other Emirates as well. But that element of community banking is where we see another gap in the market, because when you look historically, Germany, the US, 40 to 50% of small business loans and financing comes from community banks, right? The UAE has a massive SME market with now, 550,000, 600,000 SMEs. But they're being served by the large high street banks. And there's a gap in the market where community banking is seeing a resurgence, and where younger consumers, especially millennials, first and foremost, but millennials are not that young anymore. I mean, it's like I'm counting myself as a millennial, and I'm certainly not young anymore. 75% of millennials would say they align with brands and prefer brands that invest back in local communities, and that's what we're doing. So all of the funds that we're taking as deposits from the community are being reinvested into the community in the UAE.
Let's talk about the Islamic element of this, the Sharia-compliant element. Again, we have many Sharia-compliant financial institutions here in the UAE, and some of the mainstream banks offer that as well. I was looking on your website, and I love the phrase that you use. This is one of your headlines. No shady deals, just halal fields.
Exactly.
What does that mean?
So it means that Islamic banking for us fundamentally aligns with ethical consumerism, right? And it's not about just being Sharia compliant. It's about designing products and services in a way that empowers our customers to make financially responsible decisions. And all of these values of fairness, transparency, social responsibility for us very much align with ethical Islamic banking directly. So what we've done is we've eliminated fine print. We don't believe in small print. We only do big print. For instance, our fees and schedule, our schedule of fees and charges is on our community center on a 3.5 meter high video wall in like 5 centimeter large letters. To say that we would be treating our customers just the way friends would do. You wouldn't tell a friend, it was in the fine print, you signed up to it, right? When something goes wrong. So we believe in proactive transparency. And the best way to do this, we found, is to do this through ethical Islamic banking.
How are you going to win customers? We have so much competition at the moment. A lot of trusted banks, whether international names or local names. Roya obviously isn't that yet. Right. It's not easy to launch a bank. Now, WIO have done it, haven't they, as a pure play bank. So it can be done, but it's not easy. How do you do that?
Certainly not easy. And kudos to WIO. Jesh and I work together at Emirates NBD and we're good friends. So I've been following their story very closely. And it's certainly not easy. We're seeing some really, really amazing initial traction. We've launched 2 months ago and we've got thousands and thousands of downloads and thousands of new customers. So people do believe in the story of ethical consumerism and ethical Islamic banking. We've eliminated minimum balance requirements. There's no hidden fees, no minimum balance. So everybody can sign up without any fees or any minimum balance.
In terms of borrowing money and lending money, you borrow money from depositors typically. And again, I know there's quite fierce competition in the market at the moment. Base rates 5.5% or thereabouts at the moment. What are you doing to entice me or Tom or anyone listening to this to deposit their money with you rather than XYZ Bank that's offering 5% plus?
All right. So what we're doing right now is we've launched our savings account for individuals. We'll be announcing our savings rate at the beginning of July, because we're doing this retrospectively in Q2, because one of the beauties about ethical Islamic banking is that we're sharing our profits with our customers. So it's a retrospective profit sharing where we're going to say, this is the amount of money that we've made in Q2 of 2024. And dear depositor, thank you very much. This is your share of that profit. And that share is always going to be predictable for customers. And they're going to know what they're going to get out of this. So if we prosper, our customers prosper directly and proportionately. And what we're going to be doing in July as well, we're going to be announcing very attractive headline wakala fixed deposit rate. So yes, we are passing on the beneficial interest rates that we're seeing in the market onto our customers. And we've launched with liability products, a current account, savings account, and we'll be building our deposit book over the course of the year and entice customers with attractive savings rate as well.
Another way to win customers is obviously marketing. Customer acquisition for any digital company is expensive. Some of that will be online. Got to ask you before you go, our big talking point this morning is cold calling and new rules and regulations on that. What are your thoughts on cold calling, and will we be getting a call from Roya Bank anytime soon saying, what was the quote we heard earlier? You don't know me from Adam, but I'd like to talk to you about XYZ.
Yeah, so in line with our values of ethical consumerism and proactive transparency and fairness, we are certainly not going to be calling you to push products. The only reason we're going to be calling you is to say thank you, to say, can we help you with something? Or if you have called in or came to us with a problem or a question earlier, then we're going to respond to that. But we're not going to be cold calling customers, pushing unnecessary products and unnecessary borrowing into the market.
Going to let you go. Christopher Costa is the CEO of Roya Bank. He's heading off to Ajman now, where headquarters is based. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you very much, Richard. Appreciate it.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Harsh Pilgrimage 2024 is underway. How are we, the region that is, coping with the increase in travel and numbers? Well, let's get our producer's take. Mohammed Suleiman.
This year's annual Hajj pilgrimage is officially underway over in Saudi Arabia. More than 1.3 million people are already in the kingdom to take part in the rites that every financially and physically able Muslim has to perform at least once in their lifetime. Now this year, in addition to it being extremely hot in Mecca, we know that the Saudi government has introduced new measures to reduce the amount of people performing Hajj illegally. That's basically them cracking down on pilgrims who don't have the right visa or permit to enter Mecca and perform Hajj. We know that in the past they've been a bit lenient with who can be inside Mecca during this time of the year. So the message is very simple this year. If you want to perform Hajj, you must get a Saudi Hajj visa or obtain a Hajj permit. In fact, just last night we heard that 153,000 visit visa holders were caught for violating Hajj rules. Other than that, it's business as usual over in Saudi Arabia. We know that religious tourism contributes about $12 billion annually to Saudi Arabia's economy. That's about 20% of its non-oil GDP. So it's an important time for the Saudi economy, and this year is going to be no different.
So those are the thoughts of our producer, Mohammed Suleiman. Tens of thousands of pilgrims flocking through Dubai airports as they make their way to Mecca for the annual Hajj pilgrimage. How are Dubai airports dealing with it? Let's talk to the head of the Hajj committee at Dubai airports, Mohammed Al-Marzouki, joining us live on the line this morning. Mohammed, good morning to you.
Good morning to you all, guys.
Really appreciate your time on a Monday morning as well. Is it correct that the first official Hajj flights have left DXB?
Yes, indeed. It left 2 days ago, and our Hajj preparation started two days ago, and it will continue till Wednesday.
In terms of the number of travellers with regards to forward bookings and otherwise, have you got an idea how many will be travelling this year?
From Dubai, I mean UAE national, we've got the numbers because there is a quota for UAE national. So from Dubai airport itself, we'll have around 4,600 UAE national traveling to perform Hajj. The quota for the entire UAE is 6,200. So we've got like the majority of passengers traveling from here. The transit passenger, however, it might reach more than 100,000.
It's extraordinary. And obviously, of course, with that comes challenges, especially with the e-brake just around the corner, a lot of people heading off for summer as well. How key is collaboration with stakeholders to provide onward trips and make sure there's no issues?
We've started our arrangement and cooperation and meeting with the stakeholder like 2 months ago. To be very specific, just after we finished from Eid al-Fitr, so we've done our preparation, we've done our meeting, we've done our summer preparation, we've done our Hajj preparation. We've dedicated areas for Hajj passenger, dedicated lines, checking, counters, the screening machine, even the way back, baggage belt, custom belt. So we've coordinate between all internal and external, also the RTA, the ambulance services, all stakeholder within the Dubai airport and within Dubai city.
So DXB is ready for travelling pilgrims, correct?
Yes, we are indeed ready for all the passengers.
What's the advice from Dubai airports with regards to those that are travelling? We just heard from our producer there, Mohammed Suleiman, who said there's been a real focus on the right documentation from Saudi Arabia this year.
Yeah, so my advice is to make sure that all the documents are presented, and the passenger should check the validation of the documents, such as passport, Hajj permit, the vaccination certificate, the ticket, the flight number, all those documents. And I encourage the passenger to come to the airport 4 hours prior to the departure to have a pleasant and to enjoy the great experience within the DXB.
That's an interesting point you make there, coming to the airport 4 hours before, because as we mentioned just a little bit earlier on, it's a busy time at the airport this year, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is indeed. But it's not only the airport. It's the entire city. You know, we've got some huge number of cars all over the city, all over the airport. So that's why we encourage the passenger to come for or prior to the departure to have the sufficient time to finish all the paperwork and to enjoy our great experience within our outlets in the airport.
Final question, Mohammed, is centered around questions. If people do have queries, if they have questions, if they have inquiries, what's the best way for them to get answers?
Well, it depends upon the query. If the query related to the airport, then we have our website, we have our call center. But if the query regarding to the flight, to the details of the airline itself, I encourage them to contact the airline because airlines might defer their schedule due to the congestion outside the DXB. So I encourage them to contact the airline. If they have any question and they are in the airport, they are more than welcome to our to ask our guest experience ambassador who are all around the airport, and they will help them with any kind of information.
Mohammed, can't thank you enough. Mohammed Al-Marzouki is the head of the Hajj Committee for Dubai Airports, joining us live on the line this morning ahead of the Hajj pilgrimage, which, as you've just heard there, is currently underway. First official Hajj flight leaving DXB just 2 days ago over the course of the weekend. Mohammed Suleiman gave us his thoughts a little bit earlier on. Let's get more thoughts from Mohammed, because, well, this is what he loves most about Hajj.
Certainly, the thing that I love most about Hajj is just how blatantly equal everyone has to be when they're at Hajj. Whether you are a successful businessman with a fat bank balance or someone who is literally a beggar, you cannot tell the difference when you're at Hajj. Everyone has to wear the same thing. Everyone has to do the same thing. So just that equality and that element of everyone being equal in the eyes of God is really laid bare in Hajj. And it's one of those things that's really a feature when it comes to that particular element of our faith.
The thoughts of our producer, Mohammed Suleiman, there, ahead of the Hajj pilgrimage 2024.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Talking tech, talking venture capital investing in the UAE. Now, Khaled Talhouni's here, managing partner of the VC firm Newer Capital. Morning, Khaled.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
Wanted to get you in to talk to you about what you're doing with your fund. We've spoken to you before about raising a $100 million fund. Raising money isn't easy. Spending it isn't easy, though, either, and finding attractive opportunities. So of that $100 million, you've invested a lot of it in fintech. You've invested in Eywa, the spectacles company, and others so far. But you've still got a bunch left to spend. Mm-hmm. So in terms of themes, where are you investing your money at the moment?
Well, we have a little under half of our capital left to deploy. So I think the next $50 million left to deploy means that we have to be very careful about how we spend it. Thematically, what we're really interested in, kind of at a very high level, is investing in companies that are, you know, serving how the wider economy is evolving in the region as a whole. So by that, I'll give you one example. So we're very interested in the expansion of consumer credit in the region. So we've seen how companies like Tabby and Tamara, which are, you know, buy now, pay later platforms, have really allowed the expansion of consumer credit and debt. And we're interested in companies that are helping to serve that in a way. The other thing we're really interested in is...
To serve it in what way?
So whether you're looking at credit scoring, whether you're looking at collections, whether you're looking at ways to kind of help consumers also to pay that back. So really going to the second derivative of that kind of wider expansion.
So okay, so not investing in the Tabbies themselves, but companies that will be needed in the back of that, including a debt collection we're talking about.
Exactly, that'd be a good example. Another good example would be there's been a huge explosion in the activity in capital markets and public markets in the region. So they're really evolving, both in Saudi, on Tadawul and Numu, and also in the DFM and the Abu Dhabi exchange here. And you finally have an opportunity to invest in basically either regulatory tech or capital markets related technology. And we're really interested in investing in that as well.
So what kind of companies would that be? Not stockbrokers?
No, I mean, companies that really give provide the tech tools to allow these platforms to kind of expand very significantly or to allow consumer access in a way. So there's a lot of kind of elements around that that are really interesting. Because the markets were not as deep or had the volumes that they do now, you couldn't have those types of companies emerge. But now, I think, is a good time for that.
You've invested in about 30 companies so far. I'm looking on your website, roughly speaking. You're a very early stage investor at Newer. That's what you do. You say about a third of those are profitable on an EBITDA basis at the moment.
Yes.
One of the most high profile is Eywa, the spectacles company, because it's e-commerce, it's retail, and many of us know the brand. What's the story there? Are they breaking even? Are they making money? Are we now thinking about an exit for Eywa? Because it's been around a few years now.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing with Eywa is that it is an older company, but they had a unique evolution. They went from a mostly online platform to an offline platform. And then they also introduced private labels. So the company had sort of a rebirth about three, four years ago when they introduced their own labels, plus when they really expanded in retail. And that's allowed the company to really kind of grow very, very, very quickly because of the nature of the product they sell. And then number two, it's kind of put them in a kind of late stage positioning. I can't comment on the plans for the company to exit and where they are in terms of profitability. I'll just say that in terms of our within our portfolio, they're definitely one of the most advanced companies in our portfolio.
So let's talk about what you're not investing in. You say one of the important things is to avoid pitfalls, to know what you don't want to invest in. And the rent now, pay later model, I'm reading a piece on your website that you wrote recently saying, we've decided not to invest in it yet. Now, it is a booming sector. Caper, for example, we've spoken to Willy Jahabi from Caper a couple of times. They raised $30-40 million recently. You said, we're looking at it, we're interested, but so far we're sitting on the sidelines. Explain why.
Yeah, and that company is a great company, by the way, with a great founder. So big fan of Walid Shihabi. And that's why we agonized over whether we should or not invest. I think the reason why we decided to sit this one out, at least at this stage, and we may come back in later, but right now decided to not participate. I think, A, there's a number of peculiarities of the rental market here which allow this type of business to grow, and we expect the rental market to normalize with kind of global standards, meaning it's a lot more common here to ask for, you know, either a 12-month check in advance for the rent, and that's just an aberration compared to other global markets. And the reason why this persists here is because there is this sense that expat workers are a flight risk, so might as well ask for the rent in advance. And there's no credit scoring or less credit scoring of tenants, so you don't know whether they'll be able to pay the rent or not. How this has been solved historically is you ask for the rent for a year in advance plus deposit. I think as the market here evolves, you have schemes like Golden Visa, you have more permanency. If you look at population statistics for the UAE and the GCC largely, you'll see that a lot of people are staying here for longer and longer periods of time. So this perceived flight risk, I think, is diminished. And it's also a function of how hot the real estate market is. When the real estate market is hot and there's more leverage with the tenants, they can demand more in advance. But when the real estate market softens, you'll see landlords asking for 4 checks, 6 checks, 12 checks. So I think this is really subject to this, to a wider market dynamics of real estate. But number two, also the fact that the peculiarities that require this kind of 12-month check in advance is sort of dissipating in the long run.
Khalid, 10 seconds left with you. If there's one word, the themes that you're looking at for the rest of 24 and 2025, fintech, regtech, insurtech, agritech, what excites you?
So fintech and also like derivatives of fintech, we think there's a lot to be done in healthcare, health tech. I think there's huge opportunities there. And then lastly, kind of private label driven retail. So investing in companies that are building their own brands.
Khalid, good talk to you. Appreciate your time this morning. The thoughts of Khalid Talhouni there, managing partner of the venture capital firm Nua Capital.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.